each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Welcome, everyone. God bless you for tuning into The Winds of Change. Father Tom Coyce here, and that means it's Wednesday, and so happy to be with you. I want to thank Father Bush for giving me this opportunity to share with you and wrinkle your brain a little bit as we explore the many themes of life and theology and philosophy and history and psychology and everything else, whatever other ologies we can throw in there. I've been toying with trying to figure out how.
Whoa.
Oh, boy.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That is brain wrinkling time. That's what it is. And I know you're all happy. I know you're happy, but you have to pay attention, my friends. It's going to be a bumpy ride. Buckle your seatbelts. The turbulence through the air which we will fly may jostle us about here and there. And because I've been trying to figure out.
Oh, no!
Yeah, it does jostle, but sometimes. Jostling is how you straighten things out. Isn't that right? Don't you, here's a crazy little analogy from my life. And if you are a guitar player, you know exactly what I'm talking about. When you play guitar and you use a pick, every now and then the guitar pick falls into the guitar and you go, rats. The only way you can get it out is by turning your guitar upside down and trying to jostle it about to get your pick back. Many times when we're trying to figure out some sticky, difficult aspect of theology or philosophy or our spiritual life and life in general, of course, the jostling us about is part of the finding the solution. So what I'm referring to in a indirect way, and I might as well just come right out at it. And those of you who get my flock note notification, and you'll know that I'm putting together two very wild and crazy themes. One is the sex scandals that we're being inundated with in the news in many parts of the area and many parts of the world and life. Now it's part of the political world. It seems that when they come up, it's intensely talked about, and then it's pushed to the side very quickly. Which until something else, another example pops up, and they do pop up, of course. And so I'm putting together the two ideas in this radio hour of brain wrinkling. The two ideas of our human sexual frailty, brokenness, and especially brought on by the scandals that, well, by very virtue of the word scandal is scandal, it focuses the light on some radical issues, and yet it is part of everyday life, and without big scandals, there's little scandals, and sometimes scandal in one's personal life doesn't reach the stage of national attention, but it's certainly more important in your own personal life than those that do reach national attention. Anyways, there's a tremendous amount of attention, and we're going to try to reap some blessings and graces. What can we reap? And so I'm going to try to put these two themes together, these sexual scandals and the theme of Christmas. We're right around the corner of Christmas, and meditating on what the incarnation means can help us in a very real sense. That's basic. And what's going to help us through the difficulties of this is getting a deeper, a better grasp on a doctrine that I think almost all religions try to have, but very few have developed and as beautiful and as succinct or balanced as does Catholicism have with regard to original sin. All religions try to explain why the world is bad and there's so many difficulties in it. And so in one way or another, that realization, which doesn't take a PhD, doesn't even take an MA or a BA to realize, everyone realizes the world is wrought with great problems. So, but to understand original sin in light of Christmas, because Christmas really makes sense only in light of a true and right doctrine of original sin. So, Nick, I'd like to start with, this is what got me thinking, and I said, "Well, I'm gonna bring this to the Winds of Change Radio and try to wrestle with it because it's quite intense." There's one clip by her name is Brzezinski. She's the daughter of Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was the Secretary of State under Jimmy Carter. And this is Mika Brzezinski. And she's an avid anti-Trump voice in Washington. And this, what she's railing at now is in reference to his knocking one of the senators who he said, "Oh, she'll do anything for a donation," when he was helping candidates, of course, with political donations. And obviously, she takes aim at the president, but then also is explaining a side of or a way of dealing with the sexual scandal that truly needs comment and correction. So here's what let's see what she if she has let's see if we can get it done.
Go home. You're doing nothing if you stand by this president, and you should think of the country rather than your brand. And I'll tell you right now, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, I feel sorry for you. I've started a hashtag, support for Sarah, and get your mind out of the gutter. I seriously support you in your quest for truth, in your quest for goodness, in your quest for love of country, because you haven't made it there yet. And I'm not just talking about the women in the White House. I'm talking about the entire White House, all the men around this president. Do you really go home to your wives and daughters and say, this president knows what he's doing? This president stands up for women? Do you really do that? Your wives should kick you out.
That's
her. This is what they specialize in.
And that was the wonderful voice of Dennis Prager, who shared that with his listening audience, of which I am one. So we're passing this along if you didn't catch it. But I think it's a good clip, something to meditate on, because obviously it's wow. Showing her, oh yeah.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
There we go. Now we really got to wrinkle it. She wrinkles it, and I'm going to really wrinkle it some more. Hopefully we can smooth out some things so that we could have a peace. Peace. It's hard to find this peace in this jungle, as it were. Let me back up and explain the context of what she's talking about in case you've been living under a rock or something in the past month or so. But of course, President Trump is often insulted or ridiculed as being a woman hater, a misogynist, as we sometimes say, a sexist bigot, or a white supremacist bigot, different terminology that's tossed around a lot. And she's, this Micah Brzezinski is expressing her thoughts of the same. He meaning the president, defended or tried to help get the Republican in Alabama elected, which didn't happen a couple weeks ago, and because that candidate had allegations of trying to date young girls while he was older. If he was in his 30s and the girls were in their teens, that's a bad example. And they exploited that to the best of their ability, and it worked. It scared a lot of people away from voting for him. But the fact that the president was trying to help get him elected, not because he was trying to defend what he did 40 years ago, Judge Roy. That's Judge Roy was the guy, but because he was a fellow Republican, and they were, you need obviously a certain amount of votes to get any kind of an agenda done, and obviously our government is often and can be in a state of stalemate. I interpret the stalemate that our Congress is often in as a result of the general population being so non-agenda driven or so confused. We go back and forth. We have we as a body politic have a very difficult time in setting a course and staying with it. We have a collective memory of going off cliffs, and so much of the voting population is fickle. And if we've gone right for a while, we think, oh, we got to go left, and then if we go left for a while, we got to go back right, and it's a lack of a strong goal or identity of mission, identity of a purpose, as it were. So, she's saying,
whoa, you just wrinkled my brain, man.
Well, okay, hey, that's three times already, and the show has just started. Very good. But Sarah Huckabee Sanders works for President Trump, and she's trying to, as she takes questions from press and what have you, she goes about and defends her boss, the president. And so Micah Brzezinski is saying she should get out of her job, get out of the Washington, go home. You're not doing any good. And of course, you got to ask yourself the question, if she did pack up and went back home, I think, is it Nebraska or Omaha, Kansas, one of those square states out west of the Mississippi River. I always get them mixed up. Sorry about that if anybody lives out there in Omaha or Kansas City or the beautiful Plain States. They are beautiful. They really are. And they're so, it's such a blessed part of our country because the farms are so wonderful and fertile out there. That's why they call it the breadbasket, eh? But anyways, when someone is attacking you and says you should get out of here, obviously they mean to take your place. So it is quite a battle, you think. And what is really driving Brzezinski, Ms. Brzezinski, when she says, can you honestly think that the president is promoting women and is on women's side? I can't help but make something clear, my friends, that seems to be foggy for so many people, unfortunately. But the essence of what Micah Brzezinski wants Trump, President Trump, or anybody else who would have political power, the juggernaut, the foundation, the mother lode, to borrow a mining phrase, when people go digging for gold in a mine, is the abortion right issue, is it not? It seems so obvious to me. He is doing beautiful things in terms of trying to advance the sanctity of human life and the wrongheadedness of a society that has abortion rights. He can't possibly be for women. That's the obvious part that that's the obvious rendition, the obvious meaning that's behind her vindictiveness. She uses the little phrase, get your mind out of the gutter. Maybe you saw this or caught this on the news. She, meaning Micah Brzezinski, uses that in attacking Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the White House press secretary. She uses that phrase because Sarah Huckabee Sanders used that in terms of when Sarah tried to defend President Trump's comment about the, I forgot what state it was, a woman senator, or maybe she was only a congressman. Got to remember my details. I should write down notes better when I watch the news, you know, but it's just so depressing. It's hard to do such. President Trump said that, now she's all attacking me. It wasn't that way when she was coming to me for financial assistance in her campaign. She practically begged. She begged me for campaign contributions, and she would have done anything for those contributions. And so it was that comment that led Micah Brzezinski and many others to say that that's a sexist term, because he was in essence calling on that woman senator as a prostitute. She was willing to prostitute herself, and it's a insult below the belt, so to speak. and so Sarah Huckabee Sanders was saying, he will insult, when he's attacked, he'll attack back, and he'll attack in kind, as it were. You throw an insulting comment at him, and he'll throw an insulting comment back at you, whether you're male or female. And it's very clear that President Trump has said that other men would have done anything. As a matter of fact, he said that in the campaign, and he referred to, I think, Mitt Romney and someone like Mark Rubio, or that they would do anything to get the money. And of course, he didn't mean they would prostitute themselves. It just meant that they were, that's the level of politician that, and of course, it's a common quagmire. It's a common difficulty of almost every politician, you know, the compromising your principles in order to gain votes or gain contributions. So anyways, that's where the that's where that clip came from, and that's why I it does lead us into the arena of the sexual scandals. And it makes me snicker inside in one sense because of all the ridicule that people have laid on, for instance, Catholic sisters who practically ran most of the Catholic schools of the past. The Catholic sisters, more than any other kind of person, was the one who was instilling the spirit of purity and the wrongness of impurity in their children and by virtue of that throughout society. And how much ridicule has been laid upon Catholics in general and especially the Catholic sisters of old in particular because of their emphasis and preaching about moral purity, especially in the sexual areas of life. And now now we get people saying, we gotta get back to more sexual purity. And it just says, well, yeah, that's true. And how difficult, it's not so easy, my friends. So let's take that. And then what I want to do is I want to come back to relate it to the doctrine of original sin and why Christmas for us is to be received with such great joy. Stay tuned, my friends. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
We at Winds of Change thank you for your prayers and financial support. As you have often heard, Winds of Change is listener-supported. That means you, and especially now. Please give what you can to help support Winds of Change to stay on the air. Any amount will be greatly appreciated. Simply go to ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And click on the radio button to make your donation to Winds of Change, which will be a tremendous blessing. Thank you. Monday, December 25th, Christmas Day, Winds of Change offers you a gift of music and reflection. Join us as Father Anthony, Christina, Tony, and Remembering Jerry from Christmases Past, Nick and Armin wish you a holy and happy Christmas from Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Welcome to a St. Nicholas Minute. How did St. Nicholas become the patron saint of sailors? Well, when I was a young man, I made a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, visiting all the holy sites, including the humble cave in Bethlehem. During our return voyage from the Mediterranean seaport of Caesarea, a sudden, violent storm threatened the lives of everyone on board, reminding the passengers and crew how Jesus once calmed the Sea of Galilee. I invited everyone to join me in prayer to the Lord. Then, miraculously, the sea became calm. After our safe return, people started asking me to pray with them for a safe voyage. And so, that's how I became the patron saint of sailors, as well as the special friend of children during this joyous season, when we proclaim, Christ is born, glorify him.
Hey, welcome everyone. With Christmas right around the corner and the wild political Hollywood and obviously ecclesiastical, church-related, and then, of course, domestic fronts everywhere with the sexual sins sort of, in a sense, spinning out of control. We need to visit this topic and respond in as best and as holy and as good of a way as possible. Because Christmas does point us in a different direction. Notice that clip. If you just joined me, I played a clip in the first segment of a woman in Washington, sort of, we'll call her a woman insider, Micah Brzezinski. She's the daughter of Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was the Secretary of State under Jimmy Carter. As a matter of fact, when I was studying in Washington, D.C. way back when, in the Carter years, we went out for dinner, and we happened to see Brzezinski eating at the same restaurant. I remember that vividly. You know, when you're in Washington, that's one of the it's one of the games you play. That's part of the it's part of the recreation when going out to restaurants and being about in public places. You recognize faces, and then you impress your friends by saying, "That's so and so over there. That's the ambassador to Botswana, or India, or something." And so we used to do that. It's kind of like the Washington D.C. version of going to Yellowstone National Park. You ever been out there? I love Yellowstone National Park. You go out there, and what do? You drive about, and everybody's looking for wildlife. There's a moose. There's a buffalo. There's a coyote. There's a this. There's a that. And I prefer the Yellowstone Park entertainment over the Washington, D.C. entertainment. But be that as it may, we're going to... I'm going to want to try to ask you to think and pray and talk and try to act regarding this difficulty, this difficulty we find in our society and in our own families and our own hearts and our own lives, differently than what Micah Brzezinski just did. Notice she brings the issue up to the political level, trying to unload her frustrations, which probably are many, like most of us in a lot of ways. But she tries to pinpoint the cause of the problem to the political figure of the president. And if and when President Trump exhibits certain words or actions that if she finds offensive, I point her out, but there's many, many, many people like her, of course, that will locate the source of the problem in a political gesture, a political statement, a political doctrine, shall we say. And but what I need you, my friends who are listening, and is to resist to over politicize this issue particularly, because the roots are much different. And here's what here's the meat of my show today is I truly believe that we need desperately to revisit what we believe about original sin and really analyze it in a very mature, in a very detailed way, with the help and guidance of Catholic theology. And here's what I want to say, which I don't know that I've read it anywhere. I don't know that I've heard it from anyone. But the more I think about these things, and the more we hear stories, the more I'm convinced of something very true about what we would generally consider the state of original sin that we are born with or in. And that is this: original sin is a multi-head monster, or it's like a country fighting a war on two fronts. Why do I say that? Is because original sin has consequences. The disobedience of man against God and God's original plan of beauty, eternity, eternal life, beauty, harmony, health, prosperity, all that you can say about original innocence and original goodness, it breaks that original goodness, that original beauty. But it breaks it and has an effect on men differently than it does on women. that one of the contemporary topics that is on our minds and in politics and theology and religion everywhere is the distinction between male and female, which rightly it should be, as that distinction is trying to erase it. And that's why the same-sex marriage issue is so often front and center, because it gives a kind of a little knock or a little negation of the sexual purity that is supposed to exist, or that Christianity and especially Catholicism is famous for. And so, I obviously, as a man, I realize that I have a human nature, but my human nature is fallen, and the fact that I have to fight against my human nature is part of why I pray and why I think I need God. But if there are no sexual sins, you don't necessarily think of it that way. That's why people on the progressive liberal side of even Catholicism don't take advantage of the sacrament of penance or go to confession as frequently, because the idea that certain sexual falls are in need penance and forgiveness and reconciliation, it's not really there. Oh, I suppose that it'd be reserved for some radical type falls, but not the more simple and more ordinary repeated falls. But male nature has its battle, as it were. But in female, women have a different kind of battle. This is what is impressing me so much in my thinking about when thinking about these topics and these examples when they come across us. And I thought of that in as I think it was Dennis Prager, who I love to listen to, was expressing the more kind of just a biblical terminology when he said, let he who is without sin cast the first stone, obviously in reference to Jesus' words when a woman caught in adultery was to be stoned. And when that bit of wisdom is applied to the examples and the cases that are coming up today, like the Judge Roy, who is said to have been hitting on, for lack of better terminology, teenagers, or the Hollywood producers and their casting couches, and any other man of power and/or authority that use and abuse women folk in their life. A man can certainly relate to that bit of wisdom from Jesus, that he who's without sin cast the first stone, but a woman hearing that bit of advice in those situations will automatically say, hey, I don't have that sin. That's not my sin, so I can cast a stone. The desire and the need to speak out against and call a spade a spade, or a sin, a crime, is doable, because particularly in this example that the bit of advice that Jesus himself gives about not throwing the first stone, if you don't have that, let he who is without sin cast the first stone, he's sort of like giving permission to cast stone if you don't have this sin. And so for women, that bit of advice doesn't solve the problem at all, and it doesn't seem to resonate. And in a certain sense, it shouldn't, because men need to be called into a deeper sense of purity by their male friends, but especially by female friends, and especially the ones who are intimate, like your wife, shall we say, that is part of the give and take or the teaching. But for women, original sin is much different. And I've got to, I think I came up with what seems to be the right way to interpret the female consequence of original sin vis-a-vis the male consequence of original sin. But we'll get to that as soon as we come back right from this break. So stay tuned. I'm Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
We at Winds of Change thank you for your prayers and financial support. As you have often heard, Winds of Change is listener-supported. That means you, and especially now. Please give what you can to help support Winds of Change to stay on the air. Any amount will be greatly appreciated. Simply go to ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And click on the radio button to make your donation to Winds of Change, which will be a tremendous blessing. Thank you. Monday, December 25th, Christmas Day, Winds of Change offers you a gift of music and reflection. Join us as Father Anthony, Christina, Tony, and Remembering Jerry from Christmases Past, Nick and Armin, wish you a holy and happy Christmas from Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
The Spirit of Advent with Father Dominic Legg.
St. John the Baptist could be called the patron saint of Advent because he announces the coming of the Lord. And this is what we're waiting for in the Advent season. What is one of the key lines from John the Baptist, his advice to us? He says, "He must increase, but I must decrease." This could be a very nice verse to meditate on throughout Advent. How can Christ increase in my life? Well, some very practical recommendations. Think of him more often. Very simple, think of Jesus. And then when you think of him, ask him for his help. Ask him to help you with whatever you are doing right now. Ask him to be present in your life. And then ask for the grace of humility. Ask to decrease, so that as you decrease, Christ in your life will increase, and then you will be a face of Christ to those around you.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I'm trying to bring together two very important topics. One, the dark side of life, and another, the bright side. Namely, how to deal with all the sexual scandals that we're hearing about and that plague many people's lives, as well as the bright light of Christmas. Nick, when I think of the topic of original sin, and I'm going to try to explain to you a part of the doctrine of original sin that I don't think is explained too very much, but that is that men must realize that original sin affects them in one way, and it is not the same for women, and it affects women in a different way, and it's not the same for men. But when I think of this doctrine of original sin, I can't help but think of one of my favorite Christmas movies. And let's see, this is the one about the poison. So we got that one set up there, Nick. You got to remember this part.
Why didn't you deliver him right away? Don't you know that boy very sick?
Take him to me, I'm so here.
You lazy loafer.
Mr. Gower, you don't know what you're doing. You put something wrong in those capsules. I know you're on it. B, you got the telegram and you're upset. You put something bad in those capsules. It wasn't your fault, Mr. Gower. Just look and see what you did. Look at the bottle you took the powder from. It's poison, I tell you, it's poison.
I just love that. That's a powerful scene, of course, where little George Bailey is working in the pharmacy and the pharmacist, Mr. Gower, put some arsenic into the sleeping pills or whatever other pills that he was being supposed to be delivered. And that phrase needs to haunt us, needs to be applied in a theological sense here. It's poison, I tell you. It's poison. You didn't mean to do it, but it is poison, which obviously renders a sort of an objectivity to evil, that evil is not just in the will. You can mean good and do bad, and kind of vice versa, too. You may be meaning bad, and you can actually do good, even though that's a little more complicated way to come about in doing the good. But anyways, that sense of it's poison. It's poison, I tell you. What's poison today? What's poison today? The way that our modern world is trying to understand and deal with the sexual sins that are about us. I'll just put it that way. And at the heart of the sexual sins are the more simple ones, the ones that aren't recognized as sins. The reason, I'll say it this way, my friends, the reason these radical, obviously disturbing sins are called bad and are scandalous is because what should be thought of as sins in the small areas of life are not. And that's where the arsenic gets into the pills. And what I'm especially referring to, my friends, is the way our modern society has accepted and uses the whole contraceptive antidote to modern relations. It's proclaimed in grade schools, colleges, the halls of Congress, even from pulpits in different ways. Especially by ignoring the issue, it allows those priests and those bishops and those churches that ignore the issue are, in a certain sense, just allowing a certain kind of fire to build. That is a little poison that grows and grows and grows and we're at this larger stage. But no matter how large or small a sexual sin is, there is a certain kind of Christian spirit that says says it can be forgiven. Are there any can these sins be forgiven? Of course they can, but that they're very difficult to forgive is an obvious thing. And I think it's showing how the a woman's heart and a woman's soul, a woman's spirit, receives and processes these sins in a much a different way than men do. That's maybe a good realization. If we can realize that, especially as men, we can realize that from these angry outbreaks, we'd be the better for it. Okay, so I guess what I'm saying in an indirect way, but it's sort of obvious, but is that original sin does affect men in the spirit of lust more than it does women. Not that women can't have lustful thoughts or feelings, of course, but it's not the same caliber, and it's not as constant, and it's not as powerful. So, but that men can overcome and control that is part of why grace is needed, and women think, well, I don't need that much grace in order to deal with my lust because I don't have that much lust. And I think that's most likely true for a great majority of women. There's millions, if not billions, of dollars on pornography that emphasize female bodies, and there's literally there's very little that emphasize male bodies. Though, of course, obviously there are some. So, okay. So, but let's continue this line of thinking a little farther. Then what can we put our finger on when it comes to the woman's dealing with original sin? How does original sin affect a woman differently than it affects man? And here's what I wanted to propose to you. And think about this, chew on this, pray about it, and see if it's not very accurate and descriptive of our world today. We know the story of original sin, Adam and Eve, they bite the apple. If you read the scripture close enough, and you analyze the snake that tempted Adam and Eve, and you read about the disobedience or the anger, the fight that Satan had with Saint Michael, we find that the sin of Satan primarily was captured in the phrase, "I will not serve." Remember that? Satan's sin was that he would not serve God. And obviously, Saint Michael, the good angel, was willing to serve God. You know, and so if you analyze that part of the story and try to appreciate the difference between Saint Michael and Satan, you have to analyze these two attitudes. One is, "I will not serve," and the other is, "I will serve." So let me propose this to you, and I hope this helps women understand men. Oh, yeah.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
This is heavy brain wrinkling indeed. So I have to propose this to you. You who are listening, if you are a woman, you who are listening, if you are a man, try to get your head around this. My proposition is that because lust, in the male sense of the word, doesn't apply as well to the fallen nature of women, you got to come up with something else that does apply to the fallen nature of woman. And I think it is captured in that description of how a rebellious angel passes on that rebellious spirit, namely, "I will not serve." Because at the heart and core of a lot of feminine anger today, I think could be placed in that category of, "I don't want to serve my husband. I don't want to be a slave." Because when the very words come out of my mouth, "I don't want to serve my husband," it reminds you of, "I don't want to be a slave," because slaves serve their masters, and it's too easily abused. And so the feminist approach to intergender relations, how about that? The feminine approach that fuels the anger that we see in people like Micah Brzezinski and many others, I think Hillary Clinton had it as well, Pelosi, or Senator Pelosi from California. Many times when a strong feminist will start ranting and raving, they will refer to the fact that they don't want to be slaves to the man. That's why abortion rights is so key in that way of thinking, because they're losing power, as it were. So let me just I got to come back to this theme over and over again, but it's something that I think is very accurate, and we can a man can appreciate the woman who doesn't want to be a slave. So, in your relationships with women, you try not to treat them as slaves. That's as important as men not wanting to treat them as sex objects as well, or as just women to be used and abused, as it were. That's another form of slavery. You could obviously extrapolate from that. But then women, when they serve a man, how do you serve? And obviously, okay, typical examples, make the food, wash the clothes, clean the house, etc. Those kinds of domestic chores come to mind. But ladies, any women who are listening to me now, contemplate this for a moment. One of the ways that a woman can serve a man is to lead that man, especially her man, to a deeper, help him overcome the tendencies towards lust that creep up. And one of the ways that happens is to not follow the common and the very popular approach that says part of defending women's rights is defending the right to use artificial contraception and or abortion rights. A woman who defends artificial contraceptive rights is a woman who pours gasoline on the fire. It's not helping the man deal with his aspect of original sin. The woman who defends abortion rights is not serving her man in terms of helping him overcome his tendency for lust. But that is the exact opposite of what a feminist such as Micah Brzezinski is proclaiming, because she's focusing all her attitude on the president and not at all on these other two issues. As a matter of fact, these two other issues would be almost they are essential planks of the women's rights movement of today, and that President Trump is not jumping on that bandwagon. In fact, is doing his best to unhook that bandwagon from their movement. Is at the heart of their anger. We're going to come back to that as far as the dual nature of original sin. And here, by Christmas, I got to do it like this, because Christmas is the celebration of our realization that the effects of original sin are so deep and so powerful in both men and women, adults and children, everyone. We can't do it. We can't save ourselves. The whole point of the incarnation, the whole point of Christmas, is in a certain sense, God from his heavenly throne looking down at us humans and God saying to himself, they're not going to do it on their own. I've got to go down there and help them myself. It's a powerful, beautiful statement, but it's also a powerful negative statement, because it's admitting that if we were all just real smart, or that we were all just real patient, we can establish the peace and harmony and tranquility and goodness of the Garden of Eden that was lost, and Christmas says ain't gonna happen that way, so. We just got a few more minutes here, and I did want to touch on another topic, because One of the big things in the news is the tax reform or the tax cut that is happening right before Christmas. And I got to share this angle. You'll hear a lot of talk on it in the regular news, but here on Winds of Change, you tune into Winds of Change for a little different angle, don't you? Oh yeah, that's what I do. So an angle that is different. In trying to analyze why people who are opposed to tax cuts, I've come up with this angle. Obviously, when those who are opposed to it, and obviously the way the vote went in the House and Senate, where no Democrats voted for it, they're not going to say, I'm against tax cuts. They will always just say, I'm against tax cuts for the rich. And so that changes the plan. Now, number one, you might say that is not exactly accurate. It would be for not only the rich, but for less wealthy or middle class, you could say. Obviously, that it's going to benefit the rich more than non-rich is because the rich pay so much of the taxes to begin with, and that has to be recognized and understood. But be that as it may, there in this debate and in this taking sides, I find another important Catholic truth and a Catholic virtue that we have to develop. What I'm referring to is those who are against, let's just say, and for whether or not it's completely accurate or not, but this is what's in people's minds, those who will say, I'm against tax cuts for the rich, they're holding onto that position because of their belief in human nature of a certain kind. What I mean by that is they believe that the richer you get, the more greedy you get. Those who are for tax cuts for the wealthy have a more optimistic view of human nature, namely, let rich people get richer and they will help poor people get richer by virtue of their business and their job. I was at a restaurant not long ago and somebody was sitting behind us and obviously they were not owners of a business, but two workers in some kind of business. I couldn't even figure out what it was, maybe a trucking company. But the one was saying with as much sarcasm as he could muster, oh, the ones who are proposing this tax cut for the rich believe in the trickle-down theory, and there ain't nothing going to trickle down. And that attitude, which fuels the anger against the tax cut, is based on a more negative belief about human nature than those who are for it. I tend to have a more positive understanding of human nature, and that wealth does not always bring with it greed. It can and should. And this is why religion is so crucial for our economy. Religion will bring out virtue, and that is how things get better for more people. I'm going to come back to this theme, too. Well, thank you for listening. I'm Father Tom Kois. You've been listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deep for truth or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? The inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs.
too high.